Blog Talk Radio.
Armed with Science, Research and Applications for the Modern Military is a weekly webcast that discusses cutting-edge science and technology and how they apply to military operations. Each week, we will interview scientists, administrators, and operators to educate and inform our listeners about the importance of science and technology to the modern military.
Good afternoon and welcome to episode number 29 of Armed with Science, Research and Applications for the Modern Military, on Wednesday, August 12th, 2009. Hope you're having your best day ever. I am your host, Dr. John Ohab, broadcasting from Defense Media Activities Emerging Media Directorate. Today we have the privilege of being joined by Dr. Linton Wells II, Distinguished Research Professor and Force Transformation Chair at the National Defense University. Dr. Wells will discuss an international research project, Transportable Infrastructures for Development and Emergency Support, also known as TIDES, an effort focused on providing sustainable support to stressed populations, post-war, post-disaster, and impoverished environments. TIDES is coordinated out of the Center for Technology and National Security Policy at the National Defense University and draws on a worldwide network of public, private, whole of government, and transnational talent. Dr. Wells, good afternoon, and thank you for being here on Armed with Science.
John, good afternoon. It's great to be here.
Just a quick note to our listeners, if you have questions of the 140 character or less variety, you can go ahead and post them on our Twitter page, at @armedwscience. Dr. Wells has agreed to answer those questions, so take advantage of that opportunity. If your questions are a little more lengthy, you can post them on our show page, blogtalkradio.com/armedwithscience. Dr. Wells, TIDES again stands for Transportable Infrastructures for Development and Emergency Support. Can you tell us about the TIDES research project and what are some of its goals?
TIDES is an effort to bring together public, private, whole of government, and transnational talent in order to address problems of stressed populations, post-war, post-disaster, impoverished. The origin was the military came and asked us to look at the kinds of infrastructures that are used in post-war, post-disaster, impoverished, the stabilization, reconstruction, humanitarian assistance, disaster relief, building partner capacity, or domestically defense support to civil authorities. When defense deploys to these type of situations, all we have to bring are programs of record, which are first expensive, second committed operation plan someplace, and third signed foreign custody cards, so they can't really be left behind. So the idea was, could we think of infrastructures that were less expensive, appropriate to the stressed population, that could be left behind? So we're looking at seven: shelter, water, power, integrated compression and solar cooking, heating, lighting, cooling, sanitation, and lots of information and communications technologies.
And we're going to get into that more specifically as we go along. Now, you mentioned that you actually work for the National Defense University. So let's talk about the role of the Defense Department in the project. How is DOD engaged with TIDES?
The goal of TIDES is to be able to enhance the ability of civilian coalitions to work in stressed environments. If defense is involved, if any military is involved, to enhance their ability to interoperate with the civilians, and then to economize and save everyone money by supply chain rationalization and the kind of low-cost logistics I mentioned earlier. So defense is involved, first of all, in looking at ways to share unclassified information across the boundaries of the joint force with the civilians. We're looking at trying to convert the policy and doctrine that's actually pretty good right now into effective field operating procedures, what the Army would call tactics, techniques, and procedures, looking at legal and regulatory issues, and particularly how you train, exercise, and educate so that we have effective procedures that work, and also we convert the lessons observed into lessons learned that really change behaviors.
And things are run from the Center for Technology and National Security Policy at NDU?
I like to think of TIDES as moving towards a starfish network, if you will. This comes from the book Starfish and the Spider, in the sense that we want to have a decentralized approach so that several different people, organizations, whatever, can draw on the knowledge assembled by TIDES and make use of it in whatever situations they have. Right now, to get it started, we've been coordinating this as a research project from NDU, but our participants include academia that range as far away as Nanyang Technological University in Singapore, Johns Hopkins University, San Diego State. We have members of the Defense Department. We have members of other branches of the U.S. government. We have NGOs such as the Red Cross and Engineers Without Borders. So the idea is to put together a broad coalition that can work with any one of the different communities. We can talk to the civilians in civilians' language. We can talk to the military in military language. We can talk to academia. So that's the idea, is to get as broad a possible coalition and decentralize the management.
Now, what was the impetus behind TIDES? How did it originally get started?
So let me be perfectly frank. I spent 16 years in the Office of Secretary of Defense from the early 90s through 2007. In watching what happened in the Balkans and watching what happened in Afghanistan, Iraq, and tsunami and Katrina, I watched too many men and women die because governments are not very good at doing these sorts of things. And so the effort was to find a way to bring together the totality of the talent that's out there to think about this, not just within the government, not just within traditional planning cycles, but all the people who, as many people as possible, who are interested in this, and find a way to achieve unity of action in those situations where there is no unity of command.
We're talking today with Dr. Linton Wells II, Distinguished Research Professor and Force Transformation Chair at the National Defense University, about the TIDES research project. You mentioned 16 years at the Department of Defense. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the work you did before TIDES and how that got you to where you are now.
So actually, it's been more than 16. I was career Navy, so I spent 26 years in uniform. Then I was 16 years in the Office of Secretary of Defense, 7 years in policy, Undersecretary of Defense, the Policies Office, where I did something called policy support, which is basically a variety of actions to support the regional and functional bureaus. And then I was the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for 9 years, first in the Command Control Communications Intelligence Organization, or C3I, and later in Networks and Information Integration. I spent 2 years acting as the Defense Department Chief Information Officer. So one of the things that I learned there is that no matter how senior you may be, you very quickly get channelized. So people would say, well, you're the IT person. Why are you worried about energy? Why are you worried about water? And one of the things I really relish being here at National Defense University is it lets me operate across these different stovepipes to address the kind of cross-cutting issues you need in these situations.
Right, and of course that's one of the major points of this program is to discuss the interdisciplinary nature of scientific endeavors. So let's talk about the science. What kind of science is involved in the TIDES project?
To a large measure, TIDES deals with off-the-shelf equipment. But we're always finding in this space that people have new and imaginative ideas, many of them small companies at the edge rather than sort of large traditional contracts. One of the areas we've been particularly excited by is the ability to use Web 2.0 tools and other information and communications approaches to mash together information sharing and situational awareness in ways you might not otherwise achieve. For example, last week we were involved in some field experimentation in California that put together geospatial products like pictures and maps together with things like SMS texting and Twitter feeds to update them in near real time, like election monitoring or disaster monitoring or crisis mapping. And this was from 10 days in the time companies and NGOs and government people and just academia got together. There is code deployed in Afghanistan being tested as an alpha, but nonetheless being tested on the field today. That's really exciting.
We have a question over our Twitter account from CRDF_science, who's interested in the role of engineers in helping with TIDES.
So engineering is really important. TIDES is basically a knowledge-sharing framework. We're not a field operating activity. We don't do acquisition. Our job is to support decision-makers and those people working in the field with information about potential solutions. So what we try to do is look at six broad action areas. And one is build, test, and deliver capabilities. The other is to do social network development and trust building. The third I mentioned is the policy doctrine conversion. So in the first one, the capabilities across those seven infrastructures, you've got civil engineering, you've got sanitation engineers, you've got water engineering, you've got communications engineers. We're doing some terrifically interesting things in Afghanistan with communications enabled by distributed renewable power, so solar, wind, micro hydro, local geothermal in remote villages. And all these are engineering challenges. For me, the most one of the most exciting parts is we've had Engineers Without Borders involved. And these are college kids and graduate students who look at developing third world projects with their own energy and imagination. So there's lots of room for engineers here.
What would you say really makes the TIE research project so unique?
I think it's the whole of government, public, private, and transnational approach. We're looking at domestic and foreign situations, short-term and long-term. If the average stay in a refugee camp is more than 7 years, which it is, that's a qualitatively different problem than the first 60 days after the earthquake. You need different skill sets. You need different people. You need a different bureaucracy. And then finally, military involved or not. So the combination of domestic, foreign, short-term, long-term, military involved or not, means no one part of the organization, be it AID or DOD or State Department or an NGO, is going to cover all that space. So TIDES provides an opportunity to tie together, not just after the fact, but in advanced planning, a whole batch of players who can contribute.
And talk about how TIDES has contributed to real-world situations. I know you've mentioned a few already.
So one of the most interesting, let me cite two, was a few years ago there was a cyclone that came through Bangladesh. And I went out to the network, because the heart of TIDES is this worldwide network of more than 1,000 people and organizations from Australia to Northern Europe, and said, anyone know anything who can help? Someone came back and said, did you know the cholera lives in little sea creatures that lives in salt water, which I didn't know. And so if you can measure the saltwater intrusion boundary, you can give the docs a heads up as to where the cholera outbreak is going to be. So we went to the National Geospatial Imagery Association, agency, and asked, do you have any pictures? And there were no pictures from U.S. National Technical Means, but some of the commercial companies that sell us satellite imagery had current pictures. But the requirement of the contract was that they be treated as for official use only, which might as well be secret if you're dealing with NGOs and non-government agencies. So I called Admiral Keating, who was the commander of the Pacific Command, and asked if he mind if we continued, and he said, by all means, go ahead. And NGA did wonderful work, and a few days had gotten the companies to agree that as long as we left caveat the corporate logos and copyright info, they would release the pictures without caveat to anyone working on the disaster for 30 days after it. So I think that kind of intersection of policy and operations was one of the first real successes. In another case, a Canadian general came by and said, oh, this is all very interesting, I'll stop for the tropics. I've got ice melting in the Arctic. I've got the Northwest Passage opening. I have the Russians planning flights in the seabed. What do you got that works in minus 50 degrees, 50 knot winds, and permafrost? To which my answer was, duh. But went back out to the network, and people came back in hours and said, I have a contract with the Inuits in Alaska. I have contracts with the government of the Yukon. And so we hooked them up with the Canadians, and I have no idea what came of it, but the idea is to connect people with solutions, with people who have problems, and those are some of the real-world things we've done.
Now, what kind of time frame are you operating on when you're talking about bringing these solutions to people around the world?
Well, in some cases, quite short. In some of the wildfires in the West, we've been able to respond in hours. In other cases, it's played out in terms of changes to policy and things like that over some years to get doctrine changed and new instructions written and things like that. And those are now making their act felt in, say, in Afghanistan or disaster relief. So it varies with the contingency.
Now, how about some of the current activities that TIDES is currently supporting around the world?
So two of the things we're particularly looking at are support to stabilization and reconstruction in Afghanistan and support to building partner capacity, especially in Latin America. In Afghanistan, I mentioned there's a project called Afghanistan, or DES Alpha. And this looks at how you might provide essential services that the Afghans themselves would value and be able to sustain with their resources. By leveraging information and communications in remote areas, that is enabled by distributed renewable power. So, for example, there are 11,000 villages roughly in Afghanistan that don't have access to power. And we have a pilot that we're working with, again, the decision makers forward, because we're not trying to invent anything. We're trying to support their needs, to put together a mix of NGOs and private volunteer organizations and international organizations, and, of course, the government of Afghanistan and the NATO coalition, and led by the U.S. side, led by Ambassador Eikenberry, to do a pilot project in Nangarhar, which is in eastern Afghanistan, that would look and see if this was an idea that might be generalized to the country. So that's one. And the other thing we're looking at with Latin America is something called PEAK, which is pre-positioned expeditionary assistance kits, which could be used in case of a disaster to provide rapid support to first responders so they could coordinate relief efforts while AID and the UN bring to bear all the relief efforts they have. And the idea here would be to build the capacity of the partner nations in the region to do this more and more for themselves. So those are two things we're looking at.
I think there was some interruption in the when you were saying the title. Can you repeat what PEAK stands for?
Prepositioned Expeditionary Assistance Kit, PEAK.
Now, people commonly, I think, talk about policy as it impacts science. Let's flip that around and ask whether TIDES has had any effect on policy issues.
I think it actually has. I mentioned the imagery release to people working on disasters. Again, I cannot say enough good about that agency. They have leaned so far forward in making geospatial products. So these are basically pictures and maps made from pictures and things like that, available not only in disasters, but recently to people who are supporting the effort in Afghanistan. And these are policy changes to which I think TIDES has had an influence. In addition, the Department of Defense recently issued a directive, an instruction, with the unfelicitous name of DoD Directive Instruction 8220.02, but it basically talks about leading very far forward to provide information and communications technology support to what we would say civil military mission participants. So the NGOs, the local security services, the UN, who are working together in a common mission. And this now, for the first time, lets DOD, for example, provide internet access to the NGOs if the bandwidth is available, lets them provide cell phone support, again, with various caveats with laws and regulations. But this is a huge step forward for DOD, and I really want to express my appreciation to the former CIO, Mr. Grimes, who pushed this through and signed it out.
Now, how would somebody get involved in TIDES if they were so inclined?
So our website is star-tides.net, and if you go to the site and look around and find you like it, there's an opportunity to register, and you can sign up at whatever level you want to. If you just want to receive a newsletter, or if you just want to just follow what's going on the website, that's fine. If you want to join some sort of a working group or a discussion thread, that's fine also. So we would love to have those who are interested participate.
So individuals who are not already part of an organization can become part of a group by joining?
Absolutely. In addition, coming up in October, we have our third annual demonstration here at Fort McNair in Southwest Washington. It'll be the 6th through the 9th. We'll open at 9 o'clock in the morning of the 6th and close at 4 in the afternoon of the 9th and be open 8 to 5 in the middle. But basically, we start with a cold, dark, quiet field, no comms, power, lighting, bring in equipment information sharing, whatever, that typically is suited to one of the stressed population environments. So stabilization, reconstruction will be one part of the demo. Another part will be humanitarian assistance in tropical regions. Another will be building partner capacity in impoverished environments. Another will be defense support to civil authorities, domestic disaster relief here in the U.S. When we did this last year, we started with no comms, power, water, lighting on the field, By the end of the second day, we had 7 satellite networks working off the power grid. A third of the site was being powered by portable solar and wind. The water was being purified directly out of the Potomac in portable units, and all the food was being cooked in solar ovens. So this is not just a PowerPoint or a static display. It actually is equipment that works.
And other than this demonstration, do you have any other events that are coming up that people can visit or participate in?
We will have a booth at the Association of the U.S. Army Convention, AUSA, which will be the same time as our demo, and I hope that people will cross-pollinate and go back and forth between the two. Probably February, I don't know the exact dates, will be at the FCA West conference in San Diego, and then probably next May at FCA Joint Warfighting down in Norfolk. We usually do 2 or 3 sort of displays, conferences a year, as well as our field demonstrations. In addition, if any of you are interested, we actually do open field experimentation once a quarter out at Camp Roberts in California, and that's coordinated through the Naval Postgraduate School. So this is February, May, August, and November for those who actually have systems they'd like to do field testing on.
Now, you also co-wrote a paper with Dr. Drapeau, who we had on our program back in April, called Social Software and Security, an Initial Net Assessment. I was wondering if you could talk specifically about the use of Web 2.0 in TIDES.
So the point of the great value of Web 2.0 is it moves from the publishing nature of Web 1.0, where you put out a static website, to encouraging a conversation. And the heart of TIDES really is the ability to access distributed innovation through distributed talent. And so, as an example, this distributed essential services in Afghanistan I mentioned has a wiki that we're using as part of our planning process. And so if we're looking at agriculture and how communication power might affect agriculture, we're looking at 4 type situations, the provincial capital of Jalalabad, 4 district capitals, remote villages, and a refugee or internally displaced person camp. So we invite anyone who has information about agriculture to post their thoughts and maybe some of their costs and some of their systems to the wiki, which is afghantides.pbworks.com. Similarly, those who want to do telemedicine, those who want to do education, those who want to do water purification or lighting or the power sources. So this has been a great way to bring information to the normal planning staffs that they might not otherwise have had. So that's one way. We have our website, which we're trying to improve significantly. And again, we want to use the Web 2.0 as a way to establish a dialogue with people who are interested in the kind of things the TIDES are working on.
As we wrap up today's program, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just I want to thank the Center for Technology and National Security Policy here for supporting TIDES and giving us the opportunity to get started. What's been really rewarding here is the extent to which you get such a diverse population of people who are interested. As I mentioned, there's a whole variety of different engineering talent, people from all over the world, from Singapore, from Australia, from the UK, from Northern Europe, from Latin America, and just the chance to interact with these folks on issues of really current interest has been a great, very rewarding.
Today's guest is Dr. Linton Wells II, Distinguished Research Professor and Force Transformational Chair at the National Defense University. Thank you so much for being here today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, for next week's show, I will be handing over the reins to my colleague, Bob Freeman, in the Office of the Oceanographer of the Navy, who will be responsible for hosting next week's show. And we will be joined by Captain Paul Stewart, Director of the Naval Research Laboratory. Captain Stewart will discuss the Navy's corporate laboratories, which have served the nation through a wide variety of scientific and technological innovations since 1923. And Naval Research Laboratories have pioneered the development of radar, sonar, X-ray astronomy, synthetic lubricants, standard firefighting foams, nuclear propulsion for ships, fracture mechanics for safety inspections, and prototype satellites for GPS. I hope you enjoyed today's show. I'm Dr. John Ohab, and you've been scienced.